Hello, it's Monday, April 28th, and this is KTOO News Juno and a Juno Afternoon. We have a great show. Sarah Hargrave is here to talk about National Infant Immunization Week. Christy Chambora from the radio station will be talking about the auction. Eric Pittman will be chatting with us over phone about a BBC film crew who's coming to Juno to do some hummingbird studies. And we'll talk with Andy Klein, always a pleasure, about the Alaskan Brewing Company's They're going aluminum. All that and more. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. In Canada, proponents of a pipeline from Alberta to the British Columbia West Coast say they have an alternative to the Enbridge Northern Gateway pipeline. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, they also claim to have support of a majority of First Nations in the northern part of the province.
The Northern Gateway proposal has been struggling, faced with stiff opposition from environmental groups and First Nations bands. Now an Aboriginal businessman has teamed up with some British Columbia billionaires to pitch an alternative to the Northern Gateway. The new project would link a pipeline from Alberta's oil sands to a tanker terminal on the BC coast. It would include an upgrader to refine heavy bitumen to a lighter, less controversial product. So far, the new proposal has been endorsed by two small Aboriginal communities. But for many, it still raises questions, such as where would the tanker port be located and just how many First Nations have signed on. Some, like Elder Murray Smith of the Laxqualams First Nation, remain opposed.
Nothing will change our mind because the chances of losing our sea resources is very, very strong. We've got clam beds, we've got salmon of all sorts passing through that territory, and they don't want to risk that at any cost.
The group proposing the alternative says it has signed non-disclosure agreements with many First Nations communities along the planned route, and it says it has a substantial number of communities that are interested in the project. Meanwhile, the latest blow for Enbridge's Northern Gateway plan came recently when residents of Kitimat voted against the pipeline in a municipal non-binding plebiscite. A federal review panel recommended approval of the project in December, but with more than 200 conditions. The Canadian government is expected to announce its decision in June. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
In Washington, D.C., protests of the Keystone XL pipeline wrapped up over the weekend. After a week spent on the National Mall, Native people hope it put pressure on the Obama administration to scrap the plan. Capitol Hill reporter Matt Laszlo has more.
All last week, traditional Native American teepees dotted the National Mall. Travel leaders from across the U.S. were in town, highlighting the impact of the pipeline on Indian country. They argue constructing a pipeline from Canada to the Gulf Coast would upset their ancestors' land. And while the pipeline is being sold as a way to create jobs, tribal leaders say they fear construction workers would abuse Native women on reservations. Dallas Goldtooth of the Lower Sioux Indian community of Minnesota says he's glad the administration decided to delay its decision until after November's elections. But he argues that was all politics.
Rather than just straight denying it, pushing it back still leaves a lot of leverage for different parties here in Washington for their own purposes, for votes, for whatever it means, whatever way it is. So I think the White House and the State Department, you know, are dragging their feet for their own purposes.
The administration says it delayed the pipeline decision in order to let challenges to the pipeline wind through federal courts. For National Native News, I'm Matt Laszlo in Washington.
Thousands of people cheered as 2014 Miss Indian World was crowned Saturday night at the Gathering of Nations powwow in Albuquerque, New Mexico. The winner, Taylor Thomas from Fort Hall, Idaho, was one of 23 women from across the U.S. and Canada to compete for the title.
I didn't think I was going to get it. I was coming here with the intention of doing my best. It's a big shock to me.
The Shoshone Bannock woman says she's new to the powwow circle. She started dancing about a year and a half ago. Thomas says all forms of dance are a big part of Native culture.
I'm from Southeast Idaho. We don't have smoke dance. For me, coming here to see that, I think it's good bringing other cultures and traditions into this powwow scene.
The Idaho State University student is majoring in political science. Her platform for Miss Indian World is focusing on Native American pride. In April 2012, the Cherokee Nation enacted the Free Press Protection and Journalist Shield Act to protect journalists from disclosing certain information in tribal proceedings. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. The Convention and Tourism Department of the Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce provides convention and event planning services for Native American organizations. Information at ahcnm.org. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Hello, and welcome back to a Juno Afternoon on KTOO News Juno. I'm Joan Pardis, your Monday host. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. And on the screen in front of me, it says that it's raining. But out the window in downtown, it's not quite raining. But tonight it's supposed to rain, and tomorrow rain diminishing in the afternoon. Tuesday night mostly cloudy. Wednesday rain. Wednesday night rain. Thursday through Friday night partly cloudy. Highs around 64 degrees. Yes, that's the spring in Juneau this year. So I have a couple of PSAs I'd like to share with you. Be a part of the audience for the new television program, The Artist, here at the 360 studio at KTOO. Scott Burden interviews painter David Woody as a part of a multimedia presentation of his artwork. See Woody's work and learn what makes him tick at 360 in the KTOO and 360 North building. Admission is free. And when is that? That's May 1st at 7 p.m. So our first guest today is Sarah Hargrove. She is a public health nurse at the Juneau Public Health Center, and she's here to talk about National Infant Immunization Week. Hi, Sarah. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So tell us a little bit about what the purpose of National Infant Immunization Week is and what's happening here in Juneau.
Sure. National Infant Immunization Week is an annual observance to highlight the importance of protecting infants from vaccine-preventable diseases and to celebrate the achievements that the immunization programs have had in the United States. Most parents these days haven't really seen the effects of some of the illnesses that are protected against by our vaccines today because of the success of those immunization programs. So just trying to remind people that the reason that we are safe today is because of those vaccinations and to make sure everybody keeps on getting those vaccinations to keep diseases at bay.
Okay. When you talk about infant, what is the age range that you're talking about?
So we recommend immunizations against 14 preventable diseases by the age of 2. So we're talking the 0 to 2 category for infant immunization week.
So what exactly is going on at the Public Health Center this week to let people get their children vaccinated?
Yeah, we are actually waiving the vaccine administration fee, and we will see any child up to the age of 3, regardless of their insurance status, and provide vaccinations. So for this week, we can offer vaccinations to any child under the age of 3 with no cost.
Okay. And what are the hours, and do you have to call and make an appointment, or can you just walk in?
Yeah, call and make an appointment. Our number is 465-3353, and you can call and make an appointment, and we'd be happy to see you. And
okay.
We even have a few lunchtime and evening hours to help facilitate those working parents.
Right. And those immunizations for infants are usually they're not just one shot. There's usually a series. Is that correct?
Right. For each type of illness, there's usually more than one shot, but not always. And so it just depends on what other immunizations the child has had and what age, and that will help us to determine which vaccinations the child is due for at this visit.
Right. And there is a whole movement that's kind of anti-vaccination. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Sure. There's been a lot of misinformation and alternative information that people have been looking toward in recent years. And there's many reasons that people choose to delay vaccine or to not get vaccinated. And although it is an individual choice, we really encourage people to look at all the facts. Check out the CDC website and see what's really out there. There's no evidence that vaccination harms children and that it only prevents disease. It's really important right now. There's been a spike recently in the number of measles cases in the United States. And a lot of those cases that have been reported, the children have been either under-vaccinated or unvaccinated, and so they have been at risk for disease. And measles can be quite serious for many children.
Now, you said the CDC website. What does that acronym stand for?
The CDC is the Centers for Disease Control, and it's our federal organization that guides disease prevention and and control of outbreaks.
All right. And the 14, I'm not saying that you have to recite all 14 diseases, but can you do the highlights?
Sure.
You know, the ones that
sure.
are mostly eradicated because of these vaccines?
Yeah. So like polio, for example, is something that's eradicated in the U.S. and nearly eradicated worldwide. There's some cases in India. But diphtheria is one that we have seen in Juneau off and on over several years, pertussis, also called whooping cough. And so that's one we really encourage caregivers of young children and infants to be immunized for because it can cause hospitalization and serious illness. Some other ones are tetanus, which is what you would get if you stepped on a rusty nail or got some dirt in a wound. Having a current tetanus shot is important to prevent that disease, which is ubiquitous in our soil. It's still around. Some other examples are the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine that will prevent measles, and that's a two-dose series. So those are just some of the examples. And, of course, in the fall, flu. Everybody should be getting a flu vaccine in the fall.
So if you're just joining us, this is Sarah Hargrave talking. Well, I'm Joan Pardis. The other person talking is Sarah Hargrave. It's National Infant Immunization Week. The Juneau Public Health Center has waived their usual administrative fee for immunization for any child under 3. Mm-hmm. But let's talk about, you talked about the flu. We kind of moved away from infants. Let's talk about the services that Juneau Public Health Center provides. So what are the services?
Sure. We provide a variety of preventative services. So we provide children's immunizations. We provide well child checks, or kind of your well baby checks, if you need those. We also provide adult immunizations for certain types of vaccines. We don't offer all adult vaccines, but certain types for those adults who are either uninsured or underinsured. We're happy to provide those. We also provide confidential STD and family planning services. And then the Juneau Public Health Center is the local on-the-ground disease investigation force through the state epidemiology program. So when there's foodborne illness outbreaks, we would investigate those. The pertussis outbreak or the whooping cough outbreak, we would do the case investigation for that as well.
Really interesting. So, okay. And when you talk about preventative care, so if somebody comes in and has you do a checkup and you find something, or they bring their child in and you find something, then what happens? What's the next step?
Depending on the person, so for example, a child, if we do a well child check and we find something as abnormal, say their developmental screen isn't quite where we would like it to be, then our next step is to make a referral. Sometimes that is to another doctor in town. Sometimes that might be to an infant learning program, or the school system has many resources that we might be able to connect a family with. But our primary job at that point is to refer and help that family to connect with the services that will meet their needs.
Right. And so you're in touch with all the other partner agencies as far as to point people in the right direction to get their specialized help and whatever might be facing their family.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, what is the number again and the hours of the Juneau Public Health Center and the location, please?
We are located across from the Twin Lakes parking lot on Glacier Highway. Our number is 465-3353, and you can call and make an appointment. Our hours are generally from 8:30 to 5. We have appointments available. We are offering some late afternoon appointments for children's immunizations to help accommodate families, as I mentioned, and we do offer appointments during lunch. If those hours don't meet your need, please let us know. We are very accommodating and happy to try and meet your need.
Okay. Well, great. Thank you so much for coming in, and thanks for
all
you do.
Thank you very much.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 28th of April, 2014. It's the birthday of Harper Lee, born Monroeville, Alabama, 1926, author of To Kill a Mockingbird, which has sold more than 30 million copies since it came out in 1960. Harper Lee, who lives quietly today in Monroeville, where she is known as Miss Nell, she wrote, "I arrived in the first grade literate with a curious cultural assimilation of American history, romance, the Rover Boys, Rapunzel, and the Mobile Press. Why this precocity? Because in my hometown, a remote village in the early 1930s, youngsters had little to do but read. Now, 75 years later, in an abundant society, where people have laptops, cell phones, iPods, and minds like empty rooms, I still plod along with books. Instant information is not for me. I prefer to search library stacks, because When I work to learn something, I remember it. It's the birthday of Alice Waters, born Chatham, New Jersey, 1944. She was 27 years old. She had no restaurant experience whatsoever when she opened Chez Panisse, her San Francisco restaurant centered on fresh, local ingredients. Alice Waters has written 10 books, including The Art of Simple Food. She wrote, "Our full humanity is contingent on our hospitality. We can be complete only when we are giving something away." It's the birthday of the playwright Robert Anderson, born in New York City, 1917, was sent off to boarding school. He was lonely there, fell in love with an older woman, and years later wrote a play about a lonely, sensitive young man at an all-boys boarding school whose classmates decide that he's gay and make his life miserable. His one friend is Laura, an older woman who is supposed to offer him tea and sympathy but ends up sleeping with him. The play was called Tea and Sympathy, and it was a big hit in 1953. And it's the birthday of the poet Caroline Forché, born in Detroit, 1950. Author of a book of poems about El Salvador in the midst of its civil war, a book called The Country Between Us. Caroline Forché, who said, "No one is a great poet because she is a miserable drunk. No one is a great poet because he has had a nervous breakdown. Suffering, however, can be experienced as a curse or a blessing. The luckiest is the one who can experience it as a blessing." Here's a poem for today by Dana Joya, The Heart of the Matter. The heart of the matter, the ghost of a chance, a tremor, a fever, an ache in the chest, the moth and the candle beginning their dance, a cool white sheet on which nothing will rest. Come sit beside me, I've waited alone, what you need to confess I already know. The scent of your shame is a heavy cologne that lingers for hours after you go. The dregs of the bottle, the end of the line, the laggard, the loser, the last one to know. The unfinished book, the dead-end sign, and last summer's garden buried in snow. The Heart of the Matter by Dana Joya. From Pity the Beautiful, published by Grey Wolf Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Lumosity.com, a brain training program designed by neuroscientists that has been used by 50 million people worldwide. More at Lumosity.com. Produced by Joy Biles, assistance from Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Sign of spring, the music and the magic of Juno Jazz and Classics. From the David Bromberg Quintet on May 2nd through the festival finale of the Manhattan Transfer on the 17th, the days and nights will be filled with numerous ways to enjoy great jazz, blues, and classical music. Visit jazzandclassics.org to learn more. Then get your tickets for the 28th annual Juno Jazz and Classics. Music, magic, don't miss it.
It is 3:18 p.m. on April 28th. You're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm Joan Pardis. Jeff Brown's in the studio. And if that voice sounded familiar, that's because it's Christy Chambers' voice.
Hello.
Hello. There she is. She's not as perky as on that spot, but
thanks,
she's
Joan.
Here. And she's here to talk about another spring icon, the radio station's auction, KTOO,
yeah.
KRNN Spring Radio Auction.
The Spring Auction is kicking off this week. I'm super, super excited. Online pre-bidding will start May 2nd and run through May 9th, and then we close it all down online, get ready, and then on May 10th, we're going to do a live broadcast starting at 8 a.m. on KTOO and KRNN. And in 4 hours, we're going to get through all of those auction items. It's going to be pretty exciting.
Well, now this is a really important fundraiser for the station. Is that correct?
It is. We do one in the winter and we do one in the spring. And historically, the spring one has always been, I feel like there's more excitement surrounding it because we get a lot of participation from our tourism partners, which is awesome. So lots of really great things for people who have visitors coming to town or to experience things that you never really get to do in your own backyard.
Okay.
So it's pretty cool.
And it's the community taking care of her own. It's local businesses.
Yes, absolutely. Local businesses participating and donating items, gift cards, experiences, lots of variety. It's pretty cool.
So if, let's say I owned a business and I heard this and I said, ooh, I want to get in. I want to get in that catalog. What do you have to do?
All you have to do is call me. I'm finalizing the insert for the Juno Empire, so I'd like to hear from you today or tomorrow, if possible. But you can call me at 463-6426. Or shoot me an email. It's Christy, C-H-R-I-S-T-Y, at k2.org.
Okay. So can you tell us some of you, can you give us a little preview so people could get ready to go online on May 2nd through 9th to pre-bid?
So we have great participation across so many local businesses. We have Era Flight Seeing, donated a great Taku Glacier flight seeing trip. We also have, let's see, for the crafty people, Odette Edgar, Nine Patch Treasures, Susie Homemaker Aprons. Those are always super popular. And our friends at Big Bird Brand, they are known for their Nagoonberry liqueur. It's incredible, and they changed it up this year. They also have these other awesome homemade Juno-made products that they do, and it's all wrapped up in a really pretty picnic basket, ready to go out on the next sunny day. Things like that, gift cards. We've got McDonald's participating. Just lots of really, really great stuff.
All across the board as far as tourism, homemade stuff.
Yeah, and just, like something for everybody.
Okay. So let's say we're not familiar with the online bidding portion of this.
Sure.
So from May 2nd through May 9th, what do we have to do? Where do we have to go? How does it work?
You're going to
go
to ktoo.org. We're trying to make it as simple as possible for you. So you get on there, you click on the banner. There'll be a banner right up. You can't miss it. And it'll take you to our bidding pages. It's hosted by Bidding for Good, who specializes in working with nonprofits. So they're great. And you can go on there. You can peruse the catalog. You register. So all the information you would have given a phone answerer at one point, you're just going to insert right into the little form, and then you can start bidding online. So it works very much the same way our auctions worked in the past when you'd have to call in, except this way, if you get outbid, you find out right away, and then you can place your next bid. It's kind of like you have more control over the whole bidding process.
Okay, so I bid. I say, ooh, I've got to do this, and I bid, and then I get an email, and it says, whoa, you've been outbidded. This is...
Exactly. Okay. It'll say you've been outbid, and that the current bid is at... And it gives you the amount. And you can sign up for those or you don't have to. There's no, I don't want anybody to feel like there's spamming involved, nothing like that. You kind of control, like, what information you want on the items.
Okay. Then it closes May 9th. So I'm like, okay, I'm in first position for whatever my heart desire
is. Whatever the highest bidder is, wherever that leaves off, we print out automatically the bid sheets. And then first thing that morning on the 10th, and in the insert that you'll see in the Juno Empire, you'll see how we're going to break out the items. So from like 8 to 9, it'll be like the first 20 items. So you can find out where your item will be and then call in. All you have to do is call. And then we'll do one round of this is it, going once, going twice, and then we'll award the item.
Okay, so if I've got this right, so I'm the top bidder on item number 34.
Yeah.
And then item number 34 is going to be between 9 and 10 on the 10th, and I listen.
You listen in.
And then that's my time to do my final bid.
That is your time to do your final bid. And it, you know, it could be, depending on how it goes, you might end up being the winner. There might not be other bids, or you might have to...
Ante up.
You might have to ante up, go against some of your friends and neighbors, and
bid
for that
ugly
item. Yes, yes.
Actually, it won't get ugly. It's a friendly auction. So, but also you could be, you know, you could go about this in a different way. You could just write it out and listen on May 10th, too.
You could. You can absolutely do that. You will be glued to your phone and your radio, which is awesome. But, yeah. whatever your strategy is.
Okay, everybody's got their own thing.
Exactly.
So when does the insert, when can we be looking for the items in the Juno Empire?
So the insert will go out in Sunday's paper, this Sunday's paper, and then online. You'll be able to view the online catalog starting, I think, May 1st. You can look at the catalog. You can't do any bidding yet. And then May 2nd, it'll go live, 8 a.m. Alaska time. You can start placing bids.
Okay.
Yeah.
All righty. Well, Christy, thanks for joining
us. Thanks for having me, Joan.
I bet we'll hear from you again about some hot auction items.
I suspect you will.
Okay, we're going to take a short break and we'll be right back.
Someday, some way, you'll realize that you were blind. Yes, someday, you're going to want me back again. It's just a matter of time. Go on, till you come to the end of the line. I know you're gonna need my help again. It's just a matter of time. After I gave you everything that I had, you just laughed and called me a clown. You'd best remember, on your way to fortune and fame, what goes up is sure to come down. I know, I know. Someday you'll wake up and find that my love was the real thing. Now, baby, it's just a matter of time.
That was David Bromberg. He is playing Friday night, May 2nd, the kickoff of the Juno Jazz and Classics. He's going to be playing at A and B Hall. So if you're interested in any of the many, 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 many offerings of the Juno Jazz and Classics, I suggest you go online, search for them, and buy some tickets before they're all gone. Another thing I want to talk about, the Juno Kayak Club slideshow and discussion on kayak camping is happening April 29th, 7 p.m. at the JDH Library. Join fellow kayakers to look at charts, get tips on paddling routes and campsites, and find paddling partners for the coming season. Free? Everybody's welcome. Go check out the slideshow. So our next guest is by phone. His name is Eric Pittman, and he's doing a study on the Rufous Hummingbird. Is that correct, Eric? Did I say that right? Is it the Rufous Hummingbird?
That is correct. It's not really a study. What I'm doing is I'm helping VBC make a film about Alaskan animals, and the Rufous Hummingbird is what they've asked me to find for them.
Okay. And, Eric, what's your involvement? Are you a producer on this? Are you a scientist? Are you a filmmaker?
And my expertise is finding hummingbirds and filming them for making flights.
Eric, you know, I didn't hear you. Can you try that again? You might want to get closer to your phone.
Sure. My expertise is that I'm a filmmaker, and I'm able to find hummingbird nests, and I've filmed about 60 of them from nest to flight. And so the BBC has asked me to come up to Alaska to help them find this, find the nest of the Rufous Hummingbird for inclusion in their film about Alaskan animals.
Sounds great. So how can Juno as a community help you out? What are you looking for?
Well, we're asking anybody in Juno that knows of a nesting Rufous Hummingbird to give us an email at bbchummingbird@gmail.com. That's the best thing. And we'll be arriving in Juneau the second week of May. And if people are able to send us an email to that, we'll go and investigate. And if it looks right, we'll include it in the film.
Okay. And how do you shoot a hummingbird? Like how does this all, how do you attract them? How do you film a hummingbird?
Well, it is really small. You know, as you can imagine, the hummingbird nest is about the size of a golf ball, and the bird, the eggs are about the size of a coffee bean. So you have to be first of all, very careful to find the hummingbird nest. You know, we really don't want people thrashing around the bush trying to find a hummingbird nest, because most people will overlook it and may inadvertently destroy it as they're looking for it. So, you know, like I say, if you suspect that you have a hummingbird nest in your yard, just drop us an email and we'll come and take a look at it. But once we've found the nest, the mother hummingbirds are very regular. They come back and they feed their chicks every 20 minutes or half an hour throughout the entire cycle that the chicks are in the nest. So once you've found them, the challenge is to get a good shot and to make it consistent enough that, you know, over the course of the filming, you've got a nice image to project and a nice complete film at the end of it.
Okay. So a couple of questions about the hummingbird and then about the filming process. So sure. What do hummingbird chicks, baby hummingbirds, eat?
Well, they eat bugs or anything that their mother shoves down their throats, basically, for the first couple of weeks while they're in the nest.
Good babies.
They're in the, what's that?
Good babies. They eat what their mother gives them.
That's right. Eat it or nothing else.
Mm-hmm. So what is that process? So she goes out and gets a bug. Does she eat it? And, I mean, like, how does it work?
Yeah, it's like a lot of other birds. The mother bird will go out and do the hunting for the three of them, you know, for the two chicks and for herself. And she'll come back and she'll regurgitate from her crop the bugs and things that she's found. And she's very regular, so she'll feed each chick usually at each feeding. And it depends on how much she finds as to how much they get, of course. Sometimes it's just one bug. Sometimes it's a collection of little flies. And they also, of course, use the sugar water that a lot of people put in feeders. So that helps them as well.
Okay. And then do they always have two chicks?
Most of the time. There have been rare cases where there's three, and there's sometimes when there's only one. But 95% of the time, it's two chicks.
And how long do they... Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, of all the birds that I've ever filmed, I've only seen one with one, and all the others have had two.
Okay. And how long do the chicks stay in the nest?
Usually 24 days or so. Although if it's really cold, I was filming some earlier this year, and they stayed in the nest 34 days, so 10 days longer. So it really depends on the nutrition and the weather.
And then do they just take off and they're on their own, or do they stay as a unit?
They stay as a family group for about 2 weeks. In the case of the ones that I've filmed, they usually hang around the nest in the general area, and I say general area, I mean within 100 feet of it, for about 2 weeks. And after 2 weeks, the mother weans them and stops feeding them, and they have to go out and get their own food. But, of course, during those 2 weeks, they're learning themselves to feed as well, so they don't just rely on the mother. They're out there tasting everything they can and exploring the world like little birds. So, you know, they get quite adventurous and get out there, you know.
And how long do hummingbirds live?
Really hard to say. The oldest documented one has been 12 years. And, of course, you know, anywhere up to that, probably on average 2 to 3 years.
Wow. And then what brought you to a hummingbird study?
Well, I've had the hummingbirds in my backyard for the last 5 years or so. And I sort of accidentally stumbled upon them here. I've always been a photographer. And so I studied the bird that was in my backyard. Once I found that it had a nest here, I started filming the nest. And I thought, you know, I'll film one nest and that'll be it. But to my surprise, as soon as she was finished with the first nest of the year, she started another nest. And she actually had four nests in my yard that year. And so she kept building nests. I kept filming. And then eventually, when she went on to the great aviary in the sky, I went out and looked for other hummingbird nests in a bit of forest that we've got close to my home. And I was able to find them quite easily just because I understood the sounds that the mother birds made when they came to feed their chicks. So
and,
I hear them in the forest.
And where are you?
I'm in Victoria, B.C.
Okay. And that's really interesting. That kind of just drew you and then you just went deeper and deeper. So is there a perfect habitat for a hummingbird nest up here? Like, should people, like, be looking for something?
Really hard to tell what the perfect habitat is. People like to pigeonhole, if you pardon the pun, hummingbird habitat, and you really can't. I've seen hummingbird nests on chandeliers. I've seen it in spruce trees. I've seen it on vines. I've seen it hanging off cherry trees. It seems to be totally random, and it only seems to make sense to the hummingbird.
Okay, and is a rufous hummingbird the only hummingbird in Southeast Alaska?
No, you're going to have Anna's hummingbirds as well. And those are the ones that I primarily have expertise in Victoria, although we do have rufous hummingbirds here as well, but they're far outnumbered by the Anna's in our area.
Okay, well, if you're just joining us, we're chatting with Eric Pittman. He is working with a BBC crew to film hummingbirds here in Southeast Alaska in Juneau. And if you know of a hummingbird nest or you think there might be a hummingbird nest, you should get a hold of Eric. And Eric, how do they get a hold of you again?
Well, bbchummingbirds@gmail.com. That's the hotline that we've set up for it. And if you can't remember that, Eric@hummingbirdsupclose.com.
Okay.
I do have a website so you can see nesting hummingbirds on that as well.
Oh, and that's, one more time, you want to do the URL for the website?
Hummingbirdsupclose.com.
Sounds
there's
great.
There's a live cam on a hummingbird right now on that site.
Yeah, that sounds great. All right, well, thank you so much for joining us, and good luck with that study, with that filming. Sorry
much,
about
Joan.
That. Okay, bye.
Well, no study. Thank you, Joan. Okay.
Bye-bye. We're going to...
Stronger, and the new day is dawning. Once all This is Bird Note. In his book, Rare and Elusive Birds of North America, Connecticut naturalist and writer William Burt tells of the Sprague's pipit, also known as the Missouri skylark. Upward he goes, in bounding spirals, 200, 300, or even 500 feet above the plain, it is supposed. Then he weaves about slowly, easily, as if swimming, and he sings. For 20, 30 minutes or more, sometimes an hour by some accounts, then suddenly plummets, like a falcon at terrific speed. Then in the nick of time before self-destructing, he scales away and glides, and gracefully alights. A pipit sings in clear and cloudy skies alike. One evening in the rumbling black sky before a storm, I heard one sing with unusual speed and energy, and he was still up there singing when I left, with rain underway. Another time, after a brief tornado had appeared and a hailstorm roared past, I heard one sing with the same exhilaration. The wind whipped cold. Loose wisps of cloud drew past. Sand flew, and a rainbow segment came and went. And during all this, a pipit was up there singing deliriously, as if it were occasion for a party. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
It's the last barn dance of spring, this Saturday, May 3rd, 7:30 to 11 p.m. at St. Anne's Parish Hall downtown. Impromptu, featuring Mike Sicarius on Hammer Dulcimer, Ann Fuller, John Church, and Sally Donaldson, will provide lively music, and Odette Edgar will teach and call contra dances. Relive those highlights from the Folk Festival dance floor. As always, you don't need experience or a partner. Join us for a low-cost, high-fun evening out. Discounts for students and seniors free for SOG and JV's Barn Dance this Saturday night.
Walk for a Cause on May 10th. Join March of Dimes on Saturday, May 10th at Diamond Fieldhouse for this year's Juno Walk for Babies. Registration opens at 9 a.m. with the walk beginning at 10 a.m. Money you raise will help moms have healthy babies and support families of premature babies, just as the March of Dimes has done for 75 years. So who will you walk for? Walk for Babies, Saturday, May 10th. More information at marchforbabies.org.
Hello and welcome back to Juno Afternoon. It's 3:42 p.m. on April 28th. I'm Joan Pardis, your Monday host. Jeff Brown's the producer and engineer of the show, and Andy Klein, the communications manager of Alaskan Brewing Company, a very well-known voice in Juno, is here in the studio, and he's not just here by himself. He came in with a six-pack, a bottle of raspberry wheat, some great Alaskan brewery swag glasses.
Yeah.
So things are happening the brewery.
Lots happening. You're always welcome if you walk in with a six-pack.
Right?
Nobody had any room. Here I am.
You know, Andy, we like you anyway, but it's a good entree.
It's a bonus.
It really is. So what's the story? That's aluminum cans over there.
Yeah, it's a six-pack of Alaskan beer, but it's not a six-pack of bottles. It's a six-pack of cans. And so we are now canning. Cans are available starting today in Juneau and in the rest of Alaska. We're going to be canning only for Alaska for the time being while we're still in our existing facility. We're going to, just to start with, do just Amber and Free Ride APA, so two real kind of drinkable, nice beers to have in the summer, great summer beers. And that's sort of the idea. As you know, I think that people love our beer, obviously. People in Juneau are real familiar with our beer, but it's hard to take a bottle everywhere. It's hard to take a bottle out on a hike and have yourself have a reward up on the top of the mountain, and hard to go out fishing with bottles and all that kind of stuff. So it's nice to have quality beer and beer made right here in Juneau in a can, finally. So that's what we're getting a lot of people saying, finally.
Is it hard? Is it hard to go from a bottle to, I mean, like, what's the process? I mean, I don't really want to know the whole process, but kind of the talking point process.
It starts with a can.
But what happens?
Well, it's a completely separate piece of equipment. Our canning line is a totally new piece of equipment we just bought. Our co-founder, Jeff Larson, and our plant manager, Curtis Holmes, went over to an expo in Germany last year and saw this canning line on the floor of this gigantic brewing expo that's there. It's an Italian piece of equipment, and so we just had it installed. Italian guys were running all over our brewery for about 2 weeks helping us install this canning line. So it's a, so that's the difference. It's just a whole other piece of equipment. We have to figure out how to put our fill tanks on to each different piece of equipment, so we kind of direct our beer that way. So that's the big thing. And then the kind of devil in the detail thing about cans is that when bottles are bottled, when beer's bottled, the big thing about beer that degrades beer is oxygen. So what you want to do is have a high parts per billion count of oxygen, right? The science part of brewing gets into this.
I'm following.
But
you're doing great.
You want a small level of that. And typically in a bottle, it's about 40 parts per billion. But in cans, we were doing some research, and a lot of people who are doing cans out there say, hey, 600 parts per billion is okay, or even higher. And we thought that wasn't okay. So the big thing that we have been doing for the past month is dialing in that oxygen level to get it to where it's comparable to where our bottles are. And we figured that out. You know, we do taste testing at the brewery, and we do blind taste tests and all that. And you could, at the beginning, when it's this high oxygen level, you could tell the difference. And now you can't. Our brewers are guessing wrong. Which came out of a bottle, which came out of a can, they can't tell.
It sounds like a horrible job. Oh, my gosh.
That's awful.
I think I need more. I have no idea.
Speaking of which, should we bust into one of these?
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't even need a bottle opener now. So just...
There you go.
You ready? Oh.
That's it. And that's a free ride.
Free ride APA.
Yeah. But he's not drinking it out of the can. He's pouring it into a little Alaskan brewing company.
Pour samples around.
I know.
You want a sample
of
this?
Oh, yeah, sure. So what?
I know Jeff's in. Jeff, you're in for this? Absolutely.
Pass it over. So what is the black top? So it looks like the carrying case is a little different than...
It's kind of nice. It's, you know, cheers.
Yeah. Clean. Yeah, here. Thank
there
you, Andy.
There we go. Cheers.
Here's to you,
I got
Jeff.
A little cold. So what do they say? Drown a cold, feed a fever. Is that it?
Something like that. Drown a cold. I never heard drown a cold.
Mm. There you go. Free Ride APA with that hoppy bitterness and all that. Yeah, nice.
So talk about the black top to this six-pack.
They're number one, they're made out of 96% recycled material, so they're kind of green in that way. But they're not the kind that just goes around the neck of the cans. They fit over the top of the can. So it's nice from a perspective of having good-tasting beer. It protects the top of the can, so you don't have that grit at the top of cans, right? We all have that in soda cans or beer cans where it's, like, nasty on the top. So it protects that. It completely covers the top of the can. And then secondly, from an environmental standpoint, it's not the kind of beer rings that are bad for the fish and for
marine
sea
mammals,
turtles,
right,
and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So that's why we chose that. They're also, you can kind of keep them around, then you can actually pop them back in there. You can pop the can back in the six-pack really easily, and
right,
it carries them again.
He's got a mixed six-pack.
So
that's
the whole point.
He can say,
right,
I want this,
yeah,
and I want that. Well, actually, you could have Free Ride or Amber.
Yeah, that's right, two of them. So, so that's out today. Then the other big news, there's a couple of other big news about releases, and this is different than years past. Raspberry Wheat is coming out this Friday, May 2nd. Now, that's moved up a month. So for those, you know, we just heard about hummingbirds, a sign of spring and summer in Juneau. Well, one of the signs of spring and summer in Juneau is Raspberry Wheat release day. But we're moving it up a month early. So it's May 2nd, and we're producing it only for Alaska. It's one of those beers that it's part of our pilot series, and we rotate those flavors around year to year, but we realized that if we did that this year in Juneau, we would have had a revolt on our hands because people really love the raspberry wheat here in Juneau and in Alaska. So we're producing enough just for the Alaska market. So that's coming out May 2nd, just this Friday.
It makes sense. And, you know, it's going to be 64 degrees according to the screen in front of me. So it's a perfect day to pop over.
You know what's more perfect
wheat?
About that even? We're going to be serving raspberry wheat ice cream with raspberry toppings on it for all the people standing in line in the morning out at the brewery to buy their raspberry wheat. You know, this is this thing that happens every year. People camp out at the brewery. They do. It's amazing. They have lawn chairs and all these things. They line up at the gift shop of the brewery to make sure that they get their allocation of raspberry wheat for that year.
Wow.
And it does sell out really quick, but we're going to have some ice cream and some raspberry syrup on top, and it should be a fun time.
Let me see if I've got this
right.
So May 2nd is opening day for raspberry wheat.
Yes.
But how limited is the run? Is that it? Like when
it's done, it's done. Now so we've already brewed it. It's already gone through. Now there's been years past where it sells out in a day or two. That doesn't mean it's going to sell out in every store in a day or two. But if you want to get it and be sure to get it, I'd say go to the gift shop on Friday and get it. There might be a bit of a line, but we kind of run people through. It's a busy day for us in the gift shop. But
you're talking about the gift shop downtown or the gift shop at the brewery?
At the brewery. The gift shop at the brewery. Yeah, downtown we call it the depot, and at the brewery we call it the gift shop. But, yeah, thanks for clearing that up.
Got another lingo.
Yeah, and so this is the Raspberry Wheat. But look at this in here. I've got a week early bottle of Raspberry Wheat.
And two clean glasses.
And a couple of glasses. So you open this now?
Absolutely.
No, so, I've got this is an app on my phone here.
Oh, my gosh, he's using his phone
is.
To open.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's just,
he's
just
the communications manager of a brewery, yes. So let's talk about, so you're talking about, this is Alaska, Alaska, Alaska. What
yes.
you're talking about is, thank you. Here
that's,
you go, Jeff.
That's for Jeff.
You're talking about the cans and the raspberry wheat is Alaska only. But how many states does the Alaskan Brewing Company serve?
I'm glad you brought that up, Joan. Because we just moved into two new states. We are now into 17 states. Incredible, really. Out of little old Juneau.
Holy moly.
This big. And we're the 17 states. And we're actually, just the rankings just came out. We're the 17th largest brewer, craft brewer in America. 24th overall, which includes all the big guys, too. Budweiser and all those. So out of all the, even the big guys, we're the 24th largest brewery in America. Yeah, it's wild to think about that in little old Juneau, this big...
Go Juneau.
Yeah, that's right, go Juneau.
How many people do you employ?
100, just almost exactly 100. It might be like 101 right now, but right in there. And about 78 of those are in Juneau, and the rest are part of our sales team that are either, we have a couple of guys in Anchorage, and then we have some people, you have people in all of our different states, so we have about 25 or so sales reps that operate outside of Juneau.
Okay. And then what's going on with construction?
Yeah, we're expanding. So you know how we have the brewery building, and then there was a little street called Barrow Street, and then there was this other building that we bought a few years ago that we call Brew 2, and that's actually where my offices are, and we also have warehouse space there. Well, the city allowed us to vacate Barrow Street. That happened about 6 months ago, and that all just got finalized this past month, so we are now constructing. We're going to join the two buildings. Brew 1 and Brew 2 will be joined by another building, and then it'll just be one big continuous facility. The thing that's going to be great about that is we'll be able to take a forklift and drive it from one end of the building to the other. And for packaging and for efficiencies, that's going to be great, because right now for a lot of our stuff, we have to pack it all into a truck, drive it around the block, then unpack the truck, and then do something, then pack it again. You know, we just have to handle the beer a lot more than we need to. So from a kind of a production efficiency standpoint, it'll be streamlined.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I know, yeah, so it's a big month for us where we've got this expansion going on. And, I mean, it's all tore up out there. If you go out to Lemon Creek, you'll see it's all torn up out there. We're building. We've got aluminum cans coming out. Raspberry Wheat Day, so it's all big, big stuff happening.
It is, and
there.
The raspberry wheat is delicious.
Yes, oh, thank you.
It's really yummy.
All right.
So, let's talk about the depot. So, the depot is swag heaven. Is that basically what it is?
It's amazing. You know, like I've gone to beer festivals where people who own other breweries or who work at other breweries, cheers, raspberry wheat, come up and one of the first things they say is, "Oh my gosh, I was in Juneau and I can't believe the size. I can't believe how much stuff you've got in the depot. It's incredible." But that's just the function of the tourist season that we've got, and how so many people that are kind of coming through Juneau want that Alaskan beer product. So yeah, we're gearing up right now as everyone else is on Franklin Street, gearing up for tourist season. In fact, the first cruise ship came in Saturday, the Volendam. Yep.
It's here. It's definitely here.
Yeah, yeah. So the.
But you guys are open all year, aren't you?
We're open all year. We kind of made that commitment that we're going to keep that place open, not shutter it during the off season. And so, and I mean, I've taken advantage of that. I go in and get souvenirs and stuff for friends and family all the time out of the depot. So it's
and
been
also
a
you
really
host
great...
different events. I've been at literary events. I've been at musical events there. It's definitely
right here. Annie herself, who's in the studio right now, has played there.
Yeah.
Annie and the Bruisers, right? That was a good band.
Great band.
So, yeah, you're right. It's a fun area, especially that upstairs is a fun area where we try to at least once a month kind of expose different, you know, especially musical acts to people who are coming by to have some free samples.
Exactly. Yeah. So 17 states, aluminum cans, raspberry wheat. what's on the horizon? I mean, I know that's right now. You guys have been working on it a long time to get where you are now. So what's on the horizon?
I think that one thing is that brewery expansion allows us to sort of see that horizon a little bit, to plan out a little bit longer. So I think on the horizon is probably looking at other new states that are out there. We've taken a kind of slow and steady wins the race sort of approach to brewery expansion. Craft brewing is exploding right now. There's all these breweries that come out and are like, they're in 50 states right away. We take a very careful approach to how we build our distributor network, how we build our retail network, and the relationship that we have. Because if you don't do that right, it can really mean that your product, you just get signed on for a little while and then you get forgotten. And we try to maintain a really kind of vibrant relationship with our distributors, especially. So that's why we grow slowly. It's the number one question that comes in on Facebook and stuff. When are you going to come to North Carolina? When are you going to come to Virginia? When are you going to come to Massachusetts? You know, it's just so inundated every day with that. And so that's great. There's great demand. We have a great name and we have a great reputation with our beer. So people have heard that we make good beers and people are fascinated with Alaska, of course, which is something that's just happening worldwide in general. And so I think next is just going to be more steady kind of growth, but the expansion allows us to really be able to see that we can do that and not worry. Yeah, because we were bulging at the seams a little bit before that. Yeah.
So your Alaskan beer is sold on airplanes.
It is.
On Alaska.
Alaska Airlines.
I don't know about if any other.
No, Alaska and Horizon.
Uh-huh.
You know, yeah.
And then do they serve on the cruise ships?
Yeah, we do. Actually, we work with basically, I think, all of the major cruise ship lines. We actually have kegerators on Holland America, and we have that on Disney as well. And we do a lot of training with our cruise ship employees as well, and we have them out to the brewery. So, yep, that's definitely something that's out there as well.
Okay. Well, Andy, thank you so much for coming and bringing beer. So Raspberry Wheat Day is Friday.
Friday, May 2nd.
Aluminum cans are...
Out today.
Oh, my. Okay.
Today's the first day.
Do I hear the trumpet of people going, oh, gotta get in the car. Get out. There. Andy, thanks for coming.
Thanks, Joe. Nice
to have you back in the studio.
Yeah.
We're going to take a short break and wrap up the show.
Hi, this is Olivia Pizzascia. I'm a student at UAS and an artist as well. I like to incorporate color and free-form designs into my art to encourage a playful and creative relationship with our natural world. Won't you join me this first Friday for a show of my recent work? This Friday, May 2nd, at the KTOO building. We'll have an opening reception from 4:30 to 6 p.m., and the show will be on display during the entire month of May. Thanks, and I hope to see you there this Friday, May 2nd.
Okay, thank you for listening to Juno Afternoon. It's 3:57 p.m. Tonight, rain, lows around 41. Tomorrow, rain in the morning, then chance of rain in the afternoon. I don't know why they would say something like that. Tuesday night, mostly cloudy. Wednesday, increasing clouds. Wednesday night, decreasing clouds. Thursday through Friday, 62 degrees. Saturday, 61 degrees. Thanks for listening. Tomorrow, Scott Burton sitting in the seat. He's going to talk with people from Pillars of America, get the details about the upcoming productions of theater at Latitude 58, an update about Trail Mix activities, and Assistant Principal Christy Germain from JDHS will be here to talk about a parent forum on current drug topics with JPD Officer Blaine Hatch. That's all tomorrow on KTOO. Thank you for listening to Juno Afternoon.
Nothing you can do.
We all do the you.
And doodling's all I wanna do.
That's for true.
Why does every single thing I see look exactly like a doodle to me? If I ever have a doubt what life is all about, I get my pen.
This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas. We